Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of Lords of Limited. We've got the Marvel Superheroes Crash Course for you. My name is Ben Warning, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, crowd of true believers, Sacks. Ethan, I've done some practice drafts. Sounds like you've done some practice drafts. I am a true believer going into this format.
And what does that mean, though?
I think it's going to be great.
Believer, it's going to be great. I agree. Well, great maybe remains to be seen, because I do feel like we are predisposed to often come into crash courses excited for a new format.
Listen, there's not one, not two, not three. There are 10 archetypes in this format. Can you believe it?
I can. Christmas came early this year. I can believe there are 10 archetypes. But I will say that this format looks very interesting. The puzzle to solve, which is, when it comes down to it, is what brings us here every week, is that there's a fun puzzle to solve. And I feel like this looks like a really fun puzzle to solve.
Yes. Amen.
Yeah. I was hoping, as I said, I told you, I was hoping to be able to scoop you. I was doing some practice drafts via our Discord, but then I saw you doing some the other day. I was hoping to be able to come and be like, I did some practice drafts. I have opinions based on those, based on nothing. Though it did actually give me some.
The practice draft slander right off the bat. I changed some of my opinions, and it confirmed some of my opinions as well.
Well, I can't wait to hear all of those things. So let's get to it. So if you're joining us for New Set Season for the first time, welcome. We do things a little bit differently around here. We are not going to be doing a card by card graded set review, though. We will have a spreadsheet where we have graded all the commons or uncommons of the format separately from one another. That'll be available where you download the show. But what this episode is more for is for big picture stuff. So we're going to try. We've each been tasked to come to the episode with 5 format truths. We are going to go through those. We're going to also talk about the colors and their identities, what we predict that we will see from them in this format. We're going to talk about the cards that jump out to us, the cards that we think will matter, the top uncommons and notable commons. And then we'll wrap things up with maybe some sleeper commons, some notable omissions of cards we didn't talk about, and then some big picture takeaways. So hopefully all of that wrapped up in a neat little, let's say, 80 to 90 minute package will get you primed and ready. And it will be a good supplemental, a good pairing for any other full graded card set reviews that you will experience before your pre-release. Ben, anything that you want to chat about before we get into those things?
No, I want to get to the meat. Let's do the Patreon spiel and head on in.
Let's do it. Okay, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free. The Patreon gets you great perks. You get access to our Discord. You get access to our podcast feed, where you get not only this episode a day early ad-free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. We're also dropping monthly gameplay review videos, doing streams to Discord, practice drafts, the LOL Cube, which is really all I want to talk about instead of this new set, which does seem sweet. So any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page, and we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we are welcoming Andrew and John. Thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Truly cannot say thank you enough. And also cannot say thank you enough to everybody who's done practice drafts of the Lords Limited Cube in the Discord. It has been so fun.
They're not practice drafts. They're drafts. They're drafts, I mean, and then we play the game.
Sure. Yeah, they're drafts, but I don't feel like we're at a final product yet. I think we're dialing in. We're honing. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer's their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure's the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough and can lead to overwhelming feelings and counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And many worry they're wasting the days of sunshine.
It's no secret that Ben and I both have big summer plans. A wedding and honeymoon for you, a new baby for me are just around the bend. Over here, we're trying to enjoy the calm before the storm with as much family time with the three of us that we can fit in before baby girl comes and changes everything. How about you? Anything to counteract the headliner for your summer?
Yeah, I've been trying to play a lot of golf. We treated myself to hiring a painter for the house instead of trying to paint it ourselves, which was a great decision, I think, for our relationship happiness heading into the wedding. So yeah, doing a lot of stuff to keep myself enjoying summer while leading up to the headline of the summer of getting married.
Therapy can help people better understand their needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a version of summer that actually feels good.
With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and if you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs.
You don't have to say yes to everything this summer, though, Ben, you should be saying yes to something this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/lords.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show.
No. And I will say, for folks following along at home or whatever, I did I had this aha moment, and I messaged Andy and Anthony from Lucky Paper Radio. I'm sure they had long forgotten about our LOL Cube journey, but I just wanted to update them and be like, hey, we got the first draft of the thing. We've done four drafts, I should say, so far. And I get it. I get the cube thing now, because as soon as that draft was done and what I had to return to was Power Cube on Magic or on Arena, I was like, oh no, I can't go back.
You got a taste of the good stuff.
I got a taste of the good stuff. And I think we're going to get a taste of some good stuff here with Marvel Superheroes. So, format truths, Ben, I want to go first here.
Okay.
Because I think unless you've changed your tune, you're really not going to like my first one.
Oh, okay. Low power format? Get out of here.
No. Number one, for a superhero set, the cards don't feel that super.
No.
Now, what I mean by this is twofold. One is commons are back in a big way in this
format. I agree with that, yeah.
And power level is scrappy. And what I mean by scrappy will trickle down into my other takes here. But I think a big shift from Secrets of Strixhaven, where I thought there was a real correlation between the number of commons in your deck. As that number goes up, the quality of your deck is going down. I do not think that is the case in this format. I think commons will happily make up the bulk of your deck. And even the rares don't seem that broken to me. The rares that are air quotes broken feel like two for ones. Oh, a creature that comes in and kills another creature. How quaint. Oh, we're only seeing that at rare. How nice. So that's my take, is that I think the power level is ratcheted down in this format, and how that's going to play out is that commons are back.
So I think I largely agree with your take, but I will say I still think the commons being back, the commons are powerful and the uncommons are powerful. I don't know that it is less powerful overall. I just think it is spread out and rife for putting together powerful commons and uncommons to make even more powerful stuff happen.
That'll take me into my second point, which is this format is synergistic with a capital S. I think that is where the power is coming from. It is not coming from raw card quality. It's going to come from how are you painting on your empty blank canvas here with the colors that are given to you from the packs. It reminds me a little bit of Kaladesh Remastered, lots of not big A plus B synergy, but I think there's going to be lots of pockets of synergy. You're really trying to build a deck that is greater than the sum of its parts. And I think that's going to come from, oh, I've got this package of cards that works together and it overlaps with this package of cards that work together. I think it will be much more that than it will be large swaths of, yeah, there's artifact stuff, there's villain stuff. But I think the more overlap and there's, I don't know, a dozen, two dozen sideways build around type cards that I think aren't going to be the focus of your deck, but will be you know, the reason to include these four commons over these other four commons.
Absolutely. Completely co-sign that take.
Format truth number three, winning decks in archetypes will look different from each other. Again, coming off of Secrets of Strixhaven, we're like, you know what a Lorehold deck looked like. You know what a Witherbloom deck looked like. I think that color pairs decks that win are going to look vastly different from one another in this format because of that thing about pockets of synergy. The synergy that your specific deck is after, which some blue-white decks might be after certain things. There might be trying to make Reed Richards care about making tokens. So then you're going to want to be skewing towards some token makers. If you don't have Reed Richards in your blue-white deck, you might not care about tokens as much, that sort of thing. Like, the synergy your specific deck is after will dictate what cards your color pair wants.
Love that take as well.
Number four, it is trivially easy. This is shout out to Practice Drafts. It is trivially easy to fill out your 3 and 4 drop slot and hard to fill out your 2-drop slot.
Yes, that is similar to one of my takes as well.
I think it is quite possible. Now, I'm not ready to call it, but I think it's quite possible that basic land cycle will be the 2-drop of choice in the format. I also think that missing land drop 3 will be an auto lose, so mulligan appropriately.
Yeah, I felt that from the practice drafts as well. Are you ready to use the S word? Are we calling this a slow format?
I'm not ready to use the S word. Not ready to use the S word yet. And then number 5, we are back to drafting with preferences. I think this is partially due to we are no longer in a guild set life after 3 guild sets where you just sort of had to do what the table told you to do a lot of the times. I think the power level, as I said, is low. I think signals will be harder to read, and you taking the draft by the wheel, by the seat of the pants, whatever, will be important. I also think that if you figure out a kind of deck that makes good use of a handful of underrated cards early, you're just going to be able to draft that deck over and over and over again if you want.
I can't wait. In a practice draft at the end of pack one, I was black and I had feelers into green. I had feelers into white, and I still had 4 archetypes open to me at the end of pack one. And it felt incredible.
But the point I agree with that. The point I'm trying to say the thing I'm trying to hit home with this point is that after about pick 2 in a pack, the power level is just like, it's flat. And so it's a lot harder to be like, oh, well, clearly I'm getting this signpost, this signal, pick 6. Now, maybe that'll coalesce after pick orders all, you know, become homogenized or whatever. But I think that you're going to sort of have to be like, what am I doing? And what cards in this pack support what I think I'm doing versus letting you have to come to the draft versus letting the draft come to you or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think to tie it back to the Lords of Limited Cube, because that is on my brain. When we give the little like 1-minute spiel of what the cube's about before we sit down to draft, like I've been telling people, this is a high synergy format and you need to be doing something with your deck. Like if your deck is not actively doing a thing, you're going to have a bad time because there are a lot of decks that do a thing and are powerful. And I think that is going to be absolutely true in this format as well.
And I think similarly, a big question everybody wants to know, because it's like the easy hook is like, what are the archetypes doing? Like, give me a rundown of the archetypes. And in the LOL cube, I'm like, that's not a thing. Like, there are multicolored cards, but they're not all like, yes, and blue-black is draw 2. And do we have some of that in this format? Yes. But, like, the signposts are largely not like, you have to do this thing with this color pair. They're like, hey, if you happen to be doing this thing with this color pair, I might help out a little bit.
Yeah, this format is about cooking, for sure.
Yeah. All right, those are my format truths. I didn't get a lot of pushback.
I think we see a lot of good things. I think we both see a lot of the same things. And I think we both see a lot of good things from a Dave Humphries format. Number one, Marvel Superheroes is a high synergy format that rewards you for making your deck greater than the sum of its parts.
Ding, ding, ding. Check, check, check.
Check, check, check. All right. I'm live audibling here as a result of practice drafts. The official Marvel Superheroes power color rankings.
Oh my God, what a monster. What an absolute
monster. Get it in there early.
You know what's great about this is we're doing this, then we're going to come back with our early access takes, and then we are vanishing. And no one, we will never be able to adjust our opinions until the Pro Tour episode. Okay, no, go ahead.
It's going to be fine. So I initially had white in first place. And I think white looks extremely aggressive to me mm-hmm. in the format. But I think it's going to be really hard to be aggressive in the format. So I'm live audibling here, and I'm shifting white down. So I'm going to go black number one, blue number two, white number three, green four, red five. And I love red as a color, but it just does not do it for me in this format. And I'm calling it now as an Esper format.
I like this take. I think I would have called it a Sultai format myself. I think I might swap green and white. I feel like I always like black and I always don't like red. And that doesn't usually bear out to be true. And so I'm trying to keep that in check as well. But that ranking lines up. We will talk, I assume, a lot more about why you're ranking those when we get to the color identities.
Yes, absolutely. And I could honestly, I could see it being green too after the practice drafts. I could see it being a Sultai format. Esper, Sultai, that's where, but I am pretty down on red after card evals, and then that doing the practice drafts kind of confirmed that I was mm-hmm. down on red. As you like to say, the cards I thought were bad, and I didn't draft them.
I read them again in a pack and I said, I don't want that card.
Yeah. Number three. There are a lot of high toughness cards that reward you heavily for doing a thing. And I think this means a couple things for the format. I think it means you need to have a way to kill them. So I think removal is going to be great. And I think if you want to be aggressive or offensive or insert assertive, whatever magic term of choice, I think you're going to have a very clear plan for how you're planning to attack through the high toughness creatures.
You say, I wonder if we're in whatever Rubble Rouser on turn three and you're just like, oh, my ears go down. I can't attack through that type deal.
Well, but I think there's stuff seeded to help white attack through. And I think white black especially is going to be good at attacking through. And random question for you in the middle of all this, this equipment stuff. Do you think this is going to be real? Like, there's so much garbage equipment in the packs.
Yes, I in one of the practice drafts like wanted to build around the black 3-mana 3/3 that like you pay 2 life to equip something basically, and then you can also tap sack an equipment that's attached to it to give something -4/-4 until end of turn. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And I was like, but the equipment is all trash.
It's so bad. So bad.
I have eyes for the red one. I think the red one might be a little build aroundy. The Hawkeye, like when the thing becomes tapped, it deals a damage to something. Mm-hmm. There's like a red uncommon that adds 2 damage to every all non-combat damage you deal. Like there's some cooking to be done there. But I think I largely agree that the equipment, it's bad. When you think the equipment is bad.
I know it's bad. It's rough.
That
it's
means the equipment, for equipment is bad.
Yeah. I know. I love me some equipment. Okay, number four, the official Marvel Superheroes archetype power rankings.
You did not.
It did. I'm a monster.
Oh my God. All right.
What can I say? For it. So we're gonna do some live audibling here as well.
Because are these I've got tiered white. Or are these actually in a?
It was in a 10. Probably tiers is better. If I do tier one and tier two, I think that kind of clears it up. I think let's go with that. So I'm going to say tier one, blue, white, blue, black, and green, white. I think those are going to be the top five archetypes. Okay. And I think if I had to pick a number one out of those, it would either be blue, black, or green, black. Maybe this is just a Sultai format. I think those are going to be the two best decks if I had to call mm-hmm. it right now. The format looks on the slower side to me. And then in tier two, red, white, I think it's going to have some trouble attacking through everything.
I think I had made these comments even that some of the equipment and aura stuff would help the spells that target creatures. Like I thought it was more heroic-y or something. I don't know. But the equipment doesn't like fit into that. It does fit into the boosting things power, which then will matter for things that care about those boosted powers. But like red, white looks too fussy to me.
Yeah, it looks fussy without a lot of good intrinsically aggressive cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Red, black, bottom half of the power rankings, red, green, blue, green, and blue, red. And if I had to pick a sleeper out of those archetypes, I think it would be blue, green, or red, green. As much as it kills me, I love a blue, red artifact stack, and it just does not look like the tools are there for me for that to be a good deck.
I think red, green beats seems good because it is the most well set up for the thing you're talking about of like, oh no, my opponent has a bunch of 1/4s. Red green doesn't care. Red green's like, right, here's a bunch of 4/4s and 5/5s. Deal with it. Like,
yeah.
So I think red green might be sneaky or not so sneaky, but I think red green can push through those defensive starts.
And lastly, number 5, I should have made this number 4. 4 toughness and 4 mana value is the magic number in the format. So you're going to be able to need to attack through 4 toughness things. You're going to be able to need to kill 4 toughness things. My kind of hot take right now is that Lightning Strike isn't that good, which is the 1 in red, instant speed, deal 3. Like, almost everything you want to kill has 4 toughness. And in the drafts, it is trivially easy to get your 4 mana value slot like super duper uber clogged with 4s you actively want to play.
Right. Like, for example, I think this is a card that is in both of our notable commons, though this might my sleeper or my hot take right now is that maybe this card won't end up mattering, which is crazy.
I think I also have this take also,
which is Pet Avengers. This is the 3 and a green 4/4 reach. Oh, okay. This is the 3 and a green 4/4 reach with power up, 6 and a green, put a +1/+1 counter on it and make a 3/2 hero creature token with vigilance. Like, this card looks nuts, excellent, whatever. And I'm just worried that it, because of its mana value and because of how easy it is to get things that are slightly better than it in the 4 drop slot, that like this card looks great and I think might be pushed out by it being in a contested mana value slot.
That's fair. And I think if it were anything for me, it's that the card's not particularly synergistic. Like, it's a good self-contained package of a magic card. The one I was thinking of is Crimson Operative, the 3 and a red 3/2 artifact creature with prowess, and whenever it enters, exile the top card of your library until the end of your next turn, you can play that card.
I will hear no such thing. This is a 2-for-1 in a desolate landscape of 1-for-1s.
Okay.
I like Crimson Operative still. But yes, the point stands that just like a 4-drop common doesn't end up making your deck that much because there's better stuff to do.
There's good 4-drop rares. There's good 4-drop uncommons. There's 4-drop uncommons that are engine-y. Like, there's a lot of 4-drops that are synergy engines.
There's also 4-mana removal that you will have to run because that's your catch-all removal.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Shall we get to the colors and the cards?
Let's do.
All right. Let's kick things off with white. I'm going to let you kick things off because I approached the color identities a little differently, and I think our approaches will talk well to each other, but I think mine will supplement yours. So I want you to kick things off.
Kicking things off with talking about white generically or the white uncommons?
Just white generically first.
Okay. I think as a generic color, white seems super hero focused, which is no shock. Like, white is extremely hero focused, black is extremely villain focused, and the other three colors are kind of a mismatch of each. But I think if we're thinking about formats as spectrums, the more you are playing with white, the more you're going to care about heroes. The more you're playing with black, the more you're going to care about villains. And then white-black does this cool thing where it kind of cares about both in some senses.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's super hero-focused. I think it's very aggressive. I think there's a lot of good aggressive cards in white, and I think it's very similar at uncommon. But I think the format is hostile to aggro. There's just not a lot of 2-drops that help you push through an X4 or a 2/5 lifelink or whatever.
The white 2-drop common that has prowess, it's a 2-mana 2/2 with prowess, might be sneaky good. I'm curious about, like, part of me wonders if it's not in the right color. Like, wouldn't it be better if that was red or blue? But I wonder if that's just going to be key to the aggressive strategies because it will be hard to block that kind of card into open mana. But I see what you see. So what I tried to do for each of these colors was just, I looked at the commons and uncommons on Scryfall and just wrote down, what are all the themes that this color is doing, or what are the things that it seems to be like, hey, I could do this thing or that thing. White has heroes. That's top of the list. It has some life gain. It has plus one plus one counters. It has self-targeting, and it has attack alone, which all wraps up to a creature and combat focused color to me.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So what are your top white uncommons?
Top white uncommons. Number one, I feel very good about this. Agent 13, Sharon Carter. This is 2 and a white for a 3/2. Whenever a creature you control attacks alone, investigate. That card, I think, is nutter butters.
Yes, I agree. And like, yes, it is something that cares about attacking, but it's giving you a clue. Like, it's giving you value for the game to go long. So there's a little dissonance there, I feel like, between...
Well, but not, just the one,
I don't think that makes it bad.
Yeah.
But I don't think this... I don't look at this and think this is an aggressive card, even though 2-drop into 3-drop is where this card shines.
Correct. But it's a great card. It's not necessarily aggressive.
It's also my number one. So, okay. Yeah.
Number two, I feel less good about this one after drafting it early in a draft. This is Agent Maria Hill. This is single white for a 2/1 uncommon. Whenever Agent Maria Hill becomes tapped to pay a teamwork cost, put a plus one counter on her and draw a card. There's just not a lot of teamwork running around in the format.
The best one is Go Nuts, the green fight spell. But it also feels like each color gets, what, 1, 2? There's just not a lot.
It wasn't a lot. Yeah. So I feel less good about Agent Maria Hill being my number two uncommon. I had this list made before doing all the practice drafts. And in the number three slot, I've got Okoye Dora Milahe Leader. This is 3 white for a 3/2. Whenever Okoye enters, create 2/1/1 white soldier creature tokens, and attacking creatures tokens you control have first strike. I think I'm just already going to audible that up to the number two slot and put Agent Maria Hill in number three and see if any of yours pique my interest.
Yeah, I have Agent 13 at number one. I have Okoye at number two. And my number three is White Widow Free Agent. This is 3 and a white for a 2/3. When it enters, choose one. Put a plus and plus one counter on each of up to 2 target creatures or return target artifact or enchantment card from your graveyard to your hand. I also have eyes for the sort of Samwise Gamgee reprint. There's like a 2-mana 2/1 lifelink flash that returns a permanent card from your graveyard to your hand that was put there this turn. I like that quite a bit too. But I basically just like, where are my 2-for-1s at? Because they're not really at common, so wherever they are at uncommon, I'm snapping them up in this list. What white commons made your notable commons list?
I've got 3 white commons on the list. Number one, Hero in Training. This is 2 and a white for a 2/2. When it enters, draw a card. If you control another hero, you gain 2 life.
Yep.
Card seems absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Take up the shield, 1 and a white for an instant, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature, it gains lifelink and indestructible until end of turn.
My hot take is that take up the shield. This is Biosynthic Burst 2.0.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. My take up the shield did not make my notable commons list.
I like take up the shield a fair amount. And then web up also 2 and a white enchantment. When it enters, exile target non-land permanent opponent controls until this enchantment leaves the battlefield.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for putting web up on your list.
I did it. Yeah. I just think we've seen time and again that the removal spells belong in the top commons list, notable commons list. And I think web up is a good removal spell. I do have some sleeper commons I'm very excited about, unless you have others in your top commons list. Do you have the land cycler there?
I do not have the land cycler in my top commons list. I will be interested to see. That feels like it's got Imperial Oath Award written all over it. But I think I would like to save sleeper commons till later.
Okay.
I my list of 10 notable commons, I just did 2 from each of the 5 colors. That was my clean way to do it.
Yeah. Very, I'm going to make sure all my children are loved equally of you.
That's what I do as I'm gearing up for child number 2. That's what I'm trying to do. Let's talk about blue. What do you think is going on with the color blue?
Blue seems like it's got several core good cards to me at common and at uncommon, and then a lot of specific support cards for the various blue archetypes. So I think it's got a few that are headliners that go in every deck, and then basically it's deck specific after that. But I think almost all of blue's decks look pretty good to me, with the exception, I guess, half do. I'm pretty excited about blue, white, and blue, black. I'm a lot less excited about blue, red, and blue, green.
But I see what you see in terms of the core, not only the core good cards, but the core good cards being flexible. That's one of the reasons I like the Sultai colors more than I like red and white, is that, you know, that list of white things that white does, heroes, life gain, +1 counter, self-targeting, attack alone, like, they may not all necessarily be in conversation with each other. Blue, black, and green, largely, I think the cards, you can do a, what did you call it from synergy theory? There's like intrinsic synergy with the color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think blue, black, and green all have that. So like blue's sort of overarching things that it does is artifacts, second card drawn, and self-targeting. Now, the self-targeting piece of this puzzle is interesting because red-white is theoretically the self-targeting color pair, and blue doesn't have self-targeting payoffs necessarily, but it does have two cantripping targeting spells. It has the turn a thing into a 4/4 until end of turn, and it has the uncommon sorcery speed can't be blocked, and both of those have draw a card tacked onto them. So I am wondering if like blue red or blue white, or maybe a loose Jeskai, if you will end up being a self-targeting thing that brings in blue to the party. But that aside, I think the artifacts and second card drawn of it all, like, those are clear and they can talk to each other pretty nicely.
I think artifacts are terrible. And I hate saying that, but like, I think the artifacts deck really seems to want you to have a density of artifacts. Like, it wants you to have 18 artifacts in your deck or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think to do that, you just have to run so many garbage cards. And I think if you're running that many garbage cards, I don't think that seems great. And then if you have 10 good artifacts and 13 other good cards, I don't think that also a good deck makes.
I think I mostly agree with you. I agree with it because I read this point that you said that the best artifact cards are just good cards. Like, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to put Shield Deployment Drone on their top commons list, the 2 and a blue 2/2 flyer that brings along a 1/1. But that's an artifact. And that's like one of the bet you'd be like, oh, I wish I could have that. But every blue drafter at the table is taking that. And so everybody is going to have to run garbage cards. It's how you use those garbage cards that is going to make your deck good or not.
Sure. I think that's a very healthy approach from you. What I do want to ask you about is I think Connive and Draw 2 looks extremely supported. Does that look like it has a more aggressive bent to you? Or a more like mid-range grind, let the game go long? Or do you think you can do it all?
It's a good question because I guess it just depends. Like, I didn't track where on the curve those things sit, because I think the lower on the curve they sit, the more aggressive that mechanic is. Not only because it's, if it's Connive, it's buffing your creatures, but it's giving you that hand smoothing, the card selection of it all. I am a little worried, though, that so much of the Connive incentivizes you to pitch not lands. And so I'm wondering, does that mean we're going to be running 16 lands in this format, 15 lands in your maximum Connive decks so that you just have the stuff to pitch to them? I don't know. But I don't think of blue-black as being an aggressive color right now.
I think what it means is that your single black 1/2, 2 and a black, return it from your graveyard to your hand is going to be juicy in this format. I think every black deck wants a copy of that card.
I agree. You don't have to sell me on that. So what notable uncommons or what top blue uncommons made my list? Number one, I got Justice Vance Astrovik in the number one spot. That's 2 and a blue for a 2/2 flyer. When it enters, return up to one target non-land, non-token permanent to its owner's hand. And whenever another non-land permanent you control is returned to its owner's hand, put a +1 counter on Justice. The year of Man of Wars continue.
Like, what a card, right? Like, you can either get value and make a 3/3 flyer right off the bat, plus let it grow, or you can tempo your opponent out. It's got the +1/+1 counter synergy for all the cute blue-green stuff that's happening. This is an incredibly pushed Magic the Gathering card.
Yep. In the number two spot, I have Falcon Winged Wonder. It's 4 and a blue for a 3/4 flyer. And when it enters, you make Red Wing a legendary 1/1 blue bird scout creature token with flying. And whenever Red Wing attacks, surveil one. I basically, like I said, just looking for 2-for-1s wherever I could find them. And I like the look of Falcon. And I like that it's just good. It's not necessarily trying to do a specific thing. And then in the number three spot, I have Iron Lad, Diverging Destiny. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/2 artifact creature. With flying and vigilance, you may look at the top card of your library anytime, and it has tap, reveal the top card of your library. If it's an artifact card, draw a card.
That was my number two, and I think I'm live audibling out of Iron Lad, Diverging Destiny. I'm pretty down on artifacts, and I think I don't want to steer towards it initially, so I'm going to bump up my number three to my number two. I had Justice as my number one, also the Man of War. That card is absurd. In my number two slot, I'm going to put Mr. Fantastic Reed Richards. 3 and a blue for a 2/4 uncommon with reach. Whenever one or more tokens you control enter, you may draw a card. Member of the Fantastic Four. Do you know about the Fantastic Four Wombo combo?
No, what's the Wombo combo?
So if you get all four members of the Fantastic Four, they make an infinite loop with each other that wins the game on the spot. Yeah, so here's how the combo works. So if you get all four members of the Fantastic Four, they have to be in play together, and then you're either going to have to do, you probably won't be able to do something to start the cycle the turn that you land them all on the battlefield, but the cycle gets kicked off the following turn if they survive. So the cycle gets kicked off by drawing your card for the turn. So if you have Human Torch Johnny Storm, it's 2 and a red 2/2 flyer. Whenever you draw a card, if you control another hero, Human Torch deals 1 damage to target opponent. And then there's the Thing, Ben Grimm, who whenever you do damage to someone gets 2+1/+1 counters put on him. Okay. And then Sue Storm, the white one, 4 and a white 2/5 lifelink. Whenever you put +1/+1 counters on a Thing, she makes an 0/4. And then whenever that 0/4 token comes into play,
you draw
Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, draws a card, which then kicks off Johnny to do the damage. And it
that
loops
is
infinitely
really
like
really that. Cool. That's really cool. Bravo. Bravo. Bravo.
Yeah.
Elf clap there. Okay.
Super sick. I was doing a practice draft and I was like, huh, this is kind of cool. Mr. Fantastic works with Sue. And then I was like, oh, they're both members of the Fantastic Four. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then Twitch chat was like, do you know about the infinite combo? And I was like, whoa, no, I had no idea.
That's awesome. The first time, like, that has to be on the Lords of Limited
Achievement list. Has to be on the Lords of Limited Achievement list, yeah.
Let's just zoom out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because a 4-mana 2/4 reach that says, do a thing, do this specific thing, and I'll draw you cards. Like, we would, in a normal format, be like, you can't do that.
I'm going to push back against that. We had the 2/4 thing in whatchamacallit? The format with the elves. What was the name of that?
Lorwyn Eclipsed was the format.
Lorwyn Eclipsed, thank you. We had Lorwyn Eclipsed, and we had the 2/4 elemental that was whenever you cast the spell mana value 4 or greater or whatever, you drew a card. That card was excellent, and I loved it in the Crash Course, and you poo-pooed it, and it was great.
Oh, Rhymeful, whatever. Tana Speaker.
Yeah.
That was excellent.
It was excellent. And I said it was going to be excellent in the Crash Course, and I think Ms. Reed Richards is going to be excellent as well.
Okay. I mean, I agree. I like Reed Richards a lot, but I feel like that kind of card is not always excellent, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe 4-mana, 2/4s that say, I'll draw you cards if you do some work, are good.
It's I think, on the more powerful end of a long list of 4-drops that say, you need to kill this. Don't let me untap with this. And I think it is on the stronger end of that subset of cards.
Okay.
And then I'm going to audible to my number 3 slot as your 3/4 flyer that brings the token along with it.
Nice. In terms of notable commons, like I said, Shield Deployment Drone, the 3-mana 2/2 flyer that brings a 1/1, obviously. And I went with We Say the Nay.
Ooh, hot take.
Spell. 1 and a blue, instant. Counter target spell unless its controller pays 2. It has a teamwork cost of 2. So if you pay the teamwork cost, you counter that spell unless its controller pays 4 instead. I just think, yeah, I think Quench with scalability is going to be pretty dang good.
Well, I kind of like that in theory with all the talk of mana value and your 3 and your 4-drop slot getting clogged and it being hard to
Yeah.
play the 2-drop slot. And then people are going to be tapping. Like, you can kind of anticipate on turn 4, people are going to be tapping out to slam mm-hmm. one of their many good 4-drops. I like that take.
Yeah. So those are my two.
I didn't I did not put that on my top comments. I have Shield Deployment Drone. Obviously, that card is just bread and butter great. It's quality card that is also synergistic, brings a token along for Mr. Reed Richards. It's an artifact for the artifact deck. It's just a great card. Mm-hmm. I went Trickster's Stratagem as my other blue common that was notable. It's 3 and a blue sorcery. The owner of target creature and opponent controls puts into their library second from the top or on the bottom, then up to one target creature you control connives. I think this is not instant speed, but it does go second from the top, which we've seen is a huge deal, and also has the connive tacked onto it. It's going to trigger all your draw two stuff. It's going to trigger all your plus one counter stuff. I think a removal spell like this that is synergistic in a high synergy format is going to be a great player.
Yeah, I wanted to know your take on sorcery versus instant speed on this kind of effect. Your usual take is that how good this effect is do we have the triumvirate of counter spell, draw spell, and this spell to play together at instant speed? And it being at sorcery speed means we don't have that.
We don't have that, but I think it is a powerful enough card that I think that makes up for it.
Okay. All right, cool. Moving on to black, the number one in the official power rankings. What's going on with black?
I think black gets great interaction at common. It gets good villains at common. It gets an absolutely premium creature that's at its best in green, black, and red, black. And that is Hydra Troopers. We saw this last week on the previews episode. The Tuna Black 3-2. When enters, make a tap 2-1 villain creature token with menace if there are two more creature cards in your graveyard. Otherwise, mill two cards. That is absurd. And then black's uncommons are absolutely juiced.
The identities I saw for black were villains, second card drawn, and two creatures in yard. And not only do all three of those talk to each other, but they look so supported from just this color. Like, you have payoffs and enablers in just this color.
Yeah, black is self-synergistic for sure.
Yeah. Top black uncommons, what do you have?
Number one, Dark Deed. This gets the job done. All those X4s that are running around that need to get off the battlefield, this does it efficiently. This is one and a black for an instant. Target creature gets -4/-4 until end of turn.
Yep, that's my number one as well. This is really efficient in the scope of the format. Like, oftentimes, and it fits your bill of four toughness is the real thing you have to deal with. But oftentimes I feel like the removal, it comes from commons. And the uncommons is where you get your powerful cards, where you get your build around cards. And in this format, I feel like Dark Deed just sort of skirts that a little bit. Like, Dark Deed might be the best removal spell, full stop.
Yeah, Dark Deed is really strong.
Yep.
My number two, Claw Sonic Subjugator. This is 2 and a black for a 2/2 uncommon with Sonic Attack. Whenever Claw enters, target player reveals a number of cards from their hand equal to 1 plus the number of creature cards in your graveyard. You choose one of them. That player discards that card. I think this card is insane. There was in Bloomborough, there was the little Thought lizard.
Stalker Warlock.
Yeah. This card has that kind of vibes written all over it. It's at worst, it's 2/2 Burglar Rats. And at best, it's 2/2 Thought Seize Your Whole Hand.
Well, I'll push back against that comparison a little bit is that the thing about Thoughtstalker Warlock is it could come down on curve as Thought Seize Your Hand. This cannot Thought Seize Their Hand on curve.
Correct. But this card is insanely good.
Yes, I like this card a lot. I believe I gave it a B minus or B or whatever. It did not make my top three uncommons, but that's just because of how juiced black is, I think.
Okay. And I'm feeling slightly less good about my number three pick here, although this is still a great card. It's just your four slot gets so clogged so easily. But I've got a four drop here in the number three slot. This is Moonstone Harsh Mistress. 3 and a black for a 2/4 flyer. Whenever you discard a card, you can exile that card from your graveyard. If you do, until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. I think this is going to be absolutely premium if you're doing some conniving. But I don't know that you need this benefit if you're popping off conniving. I think this is less good than Reed Richards, for example.
In the world of 4-mana 2/4s that draw you cards.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, I like that card. But I don't think I gave it as high a grade. I don't feel as like, maybe that should be on my list as I do about your second one there. Okay, so I have two other ones. I have Dark Deed number one, In the number two spot, I have Baron Strucker, Hydra Overlord. This is 2 and a black for a 2/2. Villain spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. And whenever another villain you control enters, you may have it connive. Do this only once each turn.
Can I quiz you about this card? Because I was surprised to see this on your list.
Yeah,
I feel like
quiz me.
I feel like this doesn't pass your test. I feel like you're very outspoken usually about 3 mana 2/2 doesn't cut it. Do you know what I mean? Like that is a terrible rate for this card. I assume you must think that the other abilities are enough to make up for that. I mean, this is never engaging in combat and is extremely fragile.
So this could be terrible. It has types, and I am perhaps over-indexing on my comparison to... There was a card very similar to this. I think it was a 3-mana 2/2 that reduced villain's cost in the Spider-Man set. That card was also a Gravedigger. So that was a lot different than this. But I think that, yes, a 3-mana 2/2 doesn't cut it, but the fact that you will make up for that cost because of the cost reduction on future villains, I think is important. So I'm giving, and just everything is a villain. If you're a black deck, I think that this being a mana dork for that plus the connive, I think I'm going to give it a pass as a 3-mana 2/2.
I didn't find that in my drafts. Like I really found that white, blue, and white, green were like heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And that black, red was villains. But even once you started to push into blue, black, I would have assumed blue, black would have been all villains. But there are some good blue heroes. Like your blue, black deck is probably running Reed Richards. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so.
Yeah, I guess because you're making the 2/1 villain tokens. Yeah,
correct.
And Baron Strucker might not. This might be a bad take, but I like it where it is right now. And then my number three, which actually this could be bumped up. This card is ridiculous. Madam Mask is 4 and a black for a 3/2. When it enters, she connives, and whenever you draw your second card each turn, make a 2/1 black villain creature token with menace. So at the bare minimum, it's a 5-mana 3/2 that loots and makes a 2/1 for you. And then threatens to, if I untap, every draw 2 is coming with a 2/1.
Correct. So this card is nuts and should be on my list. I remember not having this on my list, seeing it on yours and then going back to read it. And I was like, oh, I like misunderstood something about this card. I don't know what I misunderstood, but I definitely didn't note that it itself brought the token along with it when it came down because of the connive. And I thought leaving it off my list and having that discussion on the podcast would be more beneficial than me just retroactively adding it to my list. That card is broken. And I think significantly better than Moonstone Harsh Mitrist.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Yeah. And this probably should just be my number two. In terms of black commons, I have Hour of Defeat, the 3 and a black instant, destroy target creature and surveil 1. And the aforementioned Hydra Troopas, 2 and a black for a 3/2. When it enters, create a tapped 2/1 black villain creature token with menace. If there are 2 or more creature cards in your graveyard, otherwise mill 2 cards.
Yeah, both of those cards are on my list. Hour of Defeat is a great removal spell. I think there's one better. I think Cruel Alliance is better than Hour of Defeat. So Cruel Alliance is 2 and a black sorcery, teamwork 2. Exile target creature with mana value 3 or less. If this spell was cast using teamwork, instead exile target creature card and you gain 3 life. So this is either going to be flat on mana value if you don't teamwork it, or if you do teamwork it, you kill anything for 3 mana and it's 3 mana value instead of 4 mana value. And there's the life gain buffer. There's the potential for teamwork payoffs if that is a thing. I don't really think that's a thing, but I just think this is a more efficient, more powerful removal spell, despite the fact that Hour of Defeat is instant speed. I don't think you're going to care particularly that your removal is instant speed, because I think the play patterns are going to go, your opponent slams something that you need to kill before they untap with it, and you're just going to kill it on your turn. I think that is how the play patterns are going to play out for removal largely.
And to my point about if I'm not a take up the shield believer, the reason it has to be directly proportional to that spell being good.
Correct.
Like the better that spell is, the worse take up the shield is. Yeah, I was just feeling like teamwork 2 was a cost that I felt like was too much. But the 3 life, and plus, if I think about like how skeptical I was of stationing. Like, teamwork is stationing.
Right. Well, and Black White's not going to care about stationing or teamwork, as it were, because you're going to be attacking with only one thing.
Correct.
And then Black's going to have a billion 2-1 menace villain tokens running around to tap.
Yep. Yeah. All right. I'm into it. You sold me.
Okay. And I think to zoom out, as you wanted to do earlier, Black's uncommons, like, we had so many different ones and they're all so good. And those removal spells are, I think, the best removal spells in the format. Certainly, I'm pitching Cruel Alliance as the best removal spell in the format. The sorcery mm-hmm. speed exiles something mana value 3 or less, and then if you teamwork it, you exile anything. Hydra Troopers looks like probably the best creature in the format to me, if you can enable it. I am just in love with Black.
Yeah. Well, the fact that Blue-Black gets both Hydra Troopers and Shield Deployment Drone, like it gets both of these premium, these 3 drop 2-for-1s at common, is really good.
The format designers are going to let the villains win? Doesn't seem right. Seems like white should be the best color in the format, huh?
Speaking of, do the villains win? Where are you at on plans now? Because I'm fully out.
Yeah, I'm not into plans.
I'm fully out on the plans. Blue has like 16 bounce spells.
Yeah, they're very fussy.
They're very fussy. Like, I'm sure one or two of them will end up being like, oh, okay, you can do that. But largely, I was like, I don't think I want to do this. Like, I got to do work. Every deck is going to have to do work, period. Like, more work than I think we are used to doing in Limited, which I'm fine with. Like, in terms of you got to cook, you got to make cards reach their ceilings, etc. Just not sure if plans is where it's at.
Yeah, I would co-sign that take.
All right, Red. What's going on with Red?
Red's commons just fall off an absolute cliff after the top two. And I'm calling Lightning Strike one of the top two. And I don't think I am that impressed with Lightning Strike. And maybe that's heresy as a limited content creator, but that's where I'm at right now. Just not very impressed with it as a color in general. All of the archetypes pull you in vastly
yes.
different directions. Like, extremely different directions. And it's not like you get a good card for red-green, or you get a good card for red-blue, or you get good cards for red-black. Like, they're just mediocre cards that kind of go in one of these four disparate decks.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing I kept noticing, where I was like, I don't feel like there's, and certainly if Lightning Strike isn't it, I didn't feel like there were headliners at common or really uncommon for the things that Red is trying to do.
One is trying to do such different things, but it doesn't even get good things to try to do all that stuff. The uncommons were slim pickings as well. Mm-hmm. And Outwatch, like, Red's going to be the best color, I'm sure. But like, if we compare Black to Red right now, everything we're saying about Black, it's got powerful interaction. It's got powerful creatures. It's got self synergy. It's got self contained synergy with Connive and the creatures in the graveyard and XYZ. Red has none of that. It does not have powerful commons. It doesn't have powerful uncommons. It doesn't have like a headliner creature, really. I mean, Crimson Operative maybe, but that's at the 4 mana value slot.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So the things that Red is trying to do, it's doing artifacts. It's doing villains, but it also has heroes. That's sort of the awkward thing. It's doing self-targeting. That is the one piece of this puzzle that I'm like, is this card deck going to be great or terrible? And I'm really hoping it's great, the self-targeting stuff. Like, I'm excited about it, but I am worried that it just is going to be like a house made of toothpicks or something. Like, it's so fragile. And then it does have this cool, like, non-combat damage thing. One of the cards I am more excited about is a payoff for this. Let me see if I can find it. It's Hawkeye, Young Avenger. It's 3 and a red for a 2/4 with reach. If a source you control would deal non-combat damage to an opponent or a permanent an opponent controls, instead it deals that much damage plus X, where X is Hawkeye's power. There's quite a few ways to support this card in the format. Like, Lightning Strike goes face, Truck Toss is a deal 4 that goes face. There's Hawkeye's Bow that is an equipment that deals damage when something is tapped. Like, there's a real, like, oh, I do a Hawkeye deck. The problem with that is that what if they kill your Hawkeye?
Yeah.
And Hawkeye is legendary, so it's not like you can be like, I load up the board with my 3 Hawkeyes and I'm ready to go. It's like, no, you get one. And then if they kill that, you deal with it. So that is the stuff that excites me the most about Red. That's the other reason that, like, I think we'll talk about this in your top on commons list. You have this card. But the self-targeting stuff, Red has a really good payoff for as well. So Red's on commons. Truck Toss is the number one for me. Two red for an instant deals, or costs two less to cast if you control a vehicle. Truck Toss deals four damage to any target. I think that the burn reach that Red has is the thing I'm most excited about it. And I think Truck Toss is the biggest chunk of damage there. In the number two spot, I have Photon Blast Barrage. This is X red for a sorcery. When you cast this spell, copy it X times, and you may choose new targets for the copies. Photon Blast Barrage deals one damage to target creature. So this is a tricky card maybe to like parse out. So it's like red, deal one damage. Three mana, it deals two damage. Four mana, it deals three damage. Five mana, deals four damage. And you can split that as you see fit. If creature size, if toughness is very high, this card is atrocious. But like picking off a bunch of villain tokens and whatever, like I think this card is good. And speaking of infinite combos, or not infinite, but there's a pretty sick combo with this in red.
With Red Hulk,
exactly, yeah. So Red Hulk is four red for a 6/7 reach trampler, and it has enrage. Whenever he's dealt damage, you put a +1/+1 counter on him, and then when you do, he deals damage equal to the number of +1/+1 counters on him to any other target. So if you do Photon Blast Barrage for four, then that's like 15 damage total that Red Hulk can deal.
Yeah, that's going to be a sick wombo combo. Outside of that, I don't think Photon Blast Barrage is a particularly good enough rate, but I was thinking about it wrong in terms of card evaluation. I was thinking about it as 3/1, 4/2. Mm-mm. I was thinking about it as a worse rate than it was. So I'm glad that you cleared that up for me, because I definitely had the wrong vibe about that. And I do think that makes it better than I thought it was. Probably good enough that it should be in my top uncommons as well, but not because I love it particularly more, just because I had a real hard time deciding what my third uncommon was even going to be.
I should have Hawkeye on my list. Like Hawkeye, I just like a lot. That's the card that I'm most excited about in red. So I will audible and put that on my number three spot, because I believe my actual number three is on your list. Yes. So I'm going to just audible and say Hawkeye is my number three.
Okay. Number one, I've got Iron Fist Living Weapon. This is two in a red for a 2/3. Whenever you cast a spell that targets a creature you control, Iron Fist gains tap. Iron Fist deals damage equal to his power to any other target until end of turn. If the self-targeting stuff is going to work, it's going to be because of this guy.
I mean, Iron Fist Living Weapon, target it with Blazing Crescendo, tap to deal five.
Deal five?
And you've drawn a card from Blazing Crescendo. Like,
yeah.
That's got to be real good.
This card is rare power level at uncommon. This is an extremely pushed uncommon.
Yes. Yep, I agree.
And if you can find ways to target that are going to cantrip or that aren't going to be running bad cards to make your good card good, I think that card's going to be quite good. I've got Truck Toss in my number two slot. And then in the number three slot, I have had Loki Laufey Sun. This is one in red for an uncommon 2/1, legendary creature, god, sorcerer, a villain. And it's got one tap. When you cast a next instant or sorcery spell with mana value less than or equal to Loki's power this turn, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. And it's got power up, four in a red, put two +1/+1 counters on Loki. So potential to pop off here with instants and sorceries. And I do think red is playing certainly most heavily, if we're talking about it as a self-contained color, in this self-targeting space.
Well, also, I know we're not talking high praise about Lightning Strike, but doubling, you get to double Lightning Strike the turn you untap with this.
Correct. That's why I put it in my slot, because it just plays great with Lightning Strike face up. I could see making room for the Photon Blast Barrage. I don't know. I'm kind of coming around to Red's uncommons being a little bit better if you think about them more holistically.
I'm kind of thinking that Truck Toss maybe gets edged out. That like the real list is like Hawkeye, Iron Fist, and Loki maybe as like three creatures that are like, I'll help you do a thing.
But even Jessica Jones is going to help you do that thing, too. The two in a red, 2/3, that when you tap her to exile cards equal to her power, and if you buff her power, then you're going to be exiling the 4 or 5 cards or whatever.
Well, I just think that Jessica Jones on her own, we were talking about, like, is this card a good card that's homeless? I think with not loving red, like, we were worried that red's going to be doing all these different things and Jessica Jones won't fit. I'm not convinced about the different things that red is doing. And I think Jessica Jones is just like, hey, I'm good and I do this thing on my own. I think Jessica Jones also is going to be pretty darn good. I don't even think you need to make, like, buff her power. Like, every other turn you draw 2 cards with her.
But all of a sudden, like, just through this discussion here, if my criticism of red is that it gets pulled in all these different directions and doesn't get good cards for all these different directions, if we just think about red as doing the self-contained, I want to be self-targeting, I want to be buffing my creature's power, and then, like, mm-hmm. doing cool combos with that sort of stuff, then I start to like red a bit more.
I agree. But that's the kind of stuff that makes me most excited about this format, is you're like, okay, well, as soon as I have this card, then all of a sudden these 3 previously thought of as garbage commons rise in my pick order.
Yeah.
I think there's just going to be a ton of that in the format. Notable commons for me, we've talked about both of them. Lightning Strike, 2-mana, deal 3 to any target, and Crimson Operative, 4-mana. It's a 3-2?
Yeah.
Oh, my brain, this was a 2-3. Oh, I like it better as a 3-2.
Do you? I like it worse.
I think it better as a 3-2. 4-mana, 3-2 prowess. When it enters, exile the top card of your library until the end of your next turn. You may play that card.
Yeah, those are both in my notable commons as well.
All right, last and certainly not least, green.
I feel like green's kind of similar to blue in that it gets some clear top commons and then, like, fills out the roster fairly well. Like, I think there's another 3 commons or whatever that are pretty solid, like, that I'd be happy/excited to put in my deck. There's not that much hero support at common for green, which was weird to me for green white heroes.
What do you mean not much support? Like, it just doesn't have a lot of heroes?
Yeah, it just doesn't have a lot of heroes. It's got, like, the dog, whatever, the pet Avengers, dog, cat, bird, hero.
Yeah, I guess the mana dork is a villain. There is a card that I really like that's a hero, but I'll save that one. But I'm looking at green right now. I see what you see.
And then, much like red, also, I think green's top uncommons are bangers and then fall off a cliff.
Yeah, one of the things that I found tricky with green in the practice drafts was I never quite felt like I could get into it because of that. Like, you would have to see one of the, you know, we're in Khazar of the Savage Land or something, like one of our top green uncommons. You have to see that early. Otherwise, it was hard to get into green because you would see Pet Avengers. You'd be like, that's a good card. I don't really want to take that here, because the problem with Pet Avengers is that it is a good card, but it's not a great card. Like, it's not like the blue 3-drop that's a 2/2 that brings a 1/1, or the black 3-drop it's not like a 2-for-1. It's not great. And so you see it and you're like, that's good, but it's not particularly synergistic with what I'm doing, and I need to take synergistic cards for my deck.
Yeah. It's very tough to have Pet Avengers be the reason you go into green, especially at 4-mana value.
Correct. I think I'm about to audible and take Pet Avengers out of my notable commons list, because there's a card I like better than it anyway.
Okay. Green uncommons, number 1, I assume is the same for both of us, Khazar of the Savage Land. This hit A- territory for me in my grades.
Yeah.
4 and a green, 3/2, you can look at the top card of your library at any time. Play lands from the top of your library. When it enters, create Zabu, a legendary 2/2 green cat creature token with landfall. Whenever a land you control enters, put a +1/+1 counter on Zabu. Like, what? What is this card?
This card's nuts. This card's nuts. Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. The next couple are good, but nowhere near that. I have number 2, Punishing Punch. This is 2 and a green instant. Costs 2 less to cast if there are 2 or more creature cards in your graveyard. Turret creature you control deals damage equal to twice its power to turret creature an opponent controls. That is extremely efficient. Like, just a fine rate in general. And then if you're doing it for single green to basically kill anything at instant speed, that's extremely strong. And then in the number 3 slot, I've got White Tiger Abba Ayala. This is 1 green for a 2/2 with power up, 5 and a green. Put a +1/+1 counter on White Tiger and create the Tiger God, a legendary 4/4 green cat god creature token with the Tiger God can't be blocked by more than one creature.
Yep. I really like White Tiger. That is my number two. Kazar, obviously, my number one. And in the number three spot, I have Punishing Punch, the two in a green.
So we've got the same three, just slightly different order.
Yep. In terms of notable commons, I have Go Nuts, the single green sorcery with teamwork three. Choose one. If the spell was cast using teamwork, you choose both. You put a +1/+1 counter on target creature, and target creature you control fights target creature and opponent controls. Just massively tempo positive. And I'm going to kick Pet Avengers to sleeper commons, and I'm going to bump up a card that I am excited about that is a hero, and that's Wakandan Royal Guard. It's four and a green for a 4/4 with vigilance. When it enters, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. If that creature is another hero, put two +1/+1 counters on it instead. I think there is a lot of, like, think about the blue Manowar. That's a hero. All of a sudden, that's a 4/4 flyer. Like, when this dumps two counters on something, I think it's going to be big game. The 3-mana 2/2 in white that draws a card, hero in training, dump two counters on that, and all of a sudden, your cantripping 3-drop is a 4/4, and this is a 4/4. I think it's going to be really easy to make this card 6 power of stats and 2 of it having haste. That I'm excited about Wakandan Royal Guard.
I hear what you're saying. It still feels out of place if you compare it to the power and synergy level of the other notable commons to me.
Okay. More for me then.
More for you.
So do you, what do you have on your list?
For commons, I have Go Nuts and Pet Avengers, but I could be easily convinced that Pet Avengers does not belong.
Should we chat? Let's chat multicolor cards and then some sleeper commons.
Yeah.
So I made my classic mistake that I always do, which is I gave nods to hybrid cards a bit more than I think will actually bear out. But in my defense, I feel like some of the hybrid cards are the cards that I actually like. So I'm not even like, it's not even just on I'm giving them a bump of power level because of their flexibility in the draft, but also because I just think they look like darn good cards. So obviously, these aren't really in a list, but if they were, or in an order, I should say, if they were, Killmonger, Scourge of Wakanda would be top of the heap. It's 2 black green for a 3/3. When it enters, you may sack another creature. When you do, destroy target non-land, permanent, and opponent controls. As long as there are two or more creature cards in your graveyard, Killmonger gets +2/+1. This is going to be top of the 17 lands power rankings for sure, I would imagine.
It has to be, unless black-green is just atrocious somehow, and it doesn't look like it's going to be.
Yeah. I did put Iron Man Master of Machines on here, which maybe I hate in retrospect. That's 2 blue-red for a 1/4 legendary artifact creature. It's got flying and vigilance. It gets +1/+0 for each other artifact you control. And whenever Iron Man attacks, if an artifact entered the battlefield under your control this turn, draw a card. Maybe I don't like this on my list anymore.
I have it on mine as well. That card is good enough. Like, there have to be artifact decks. I think you're only going to want to draft it if nobody else is fighting for it. It's going to be like blue-red otters in Bloomborough or whatever.
And then I've got U.S. Agent John Walker, 3 and Orzhov Hybrid for a 3/2 that brings along Sturdy Shield, which is an equipment that costs 2 to equip and gives something +1/+2, and it auto-equips to John Walker.
That card is great. Like, that's
just great.
A great card. It's very flexible mana value-wise. It's synergistic with tokens coming in. Like, it does what you need to do in terms of...
It buffs power.
Yeah, it buffs power to help you punch through things. That card, I think, is great, yes. That's not on my list, and it probably should be.
I have War Machine, Legacy of Iron. It's 2 and Boros Hybrid for a 1/3 flyer. This is an artifact creature as well. It's a hero as well. At the beginning of combat on your turn, another target creature you control gets +X/+0 until end of turn, where X is War Machine's power. I think if Boros is a thing, I think if aggressive decks are a thing, I think this card is going to be quite good. You get this thing's power even up once, and now it's a 2/3 flyer, and it's giving something +2/+0 every turn. I think that's a lot of damage.
Take up the and shield, then, baby.
Yeah. And then my last one is Abomination, Terrifying Titan. This is 3 and Gruul Hybrid for a 4/4 trample, and it has power up for 5 Gruul. Put a +1/+1 counter on this. He fights up to 1 target creature and opponent controls. This is big. Yeah. It gets bigger. Potentially a 2/1. I think it's good.
Yeah, I like that card. I have a couple more on my list that you didn't have on yours. Got Captain America Living Legend on here. This is one white blue for 3/4 vigilance. Whenever a creature you control becomes tapped during your turn, if it's the first time that creature's become tapped this turn, untap it. I think that card's a rate monster. And then I also have Black Widow Double Agent. I love this card. One white black for a 3/2 death touch. Whenever a creature you control attacks alone, it gains first strike and menace until end of turn. I think this card's going to be extremely oppressive from the white black deck. I like white black as an archetype quite a bit.
I agree with both of those sentiments. All right, the sleeper cards. How are we defining sleeper here?
I treat sleeper as, like, you said you were going to move Pet Avengers down to sleeper commons. Pet Avengers doesn't strike me as a sleeper card because it's obviously just a great rate magic card on card evaluation metrics. Like, sleeper commons, I'm evaluating as this is my chance to get in my hot takes. That's what sleeper commons is to me.
Great. So I will adjust accordingly because I think a lot of mine are like, these are just the second tier of commons, and that's not quite the prompt for this. Okay.
So for example, I'll kick things off with Panther Pounce.
Yes.
White, instant, target player investigates, target creature gets +1/+0 and gains flying until end of turn, untap it. That is a lot for one mana.
And I was knocking this initially for not cantripping up front, that it, you know, you got to pay 2 extra mana to get your card back.
If it cantripped, it should be like 2 and a white or whatever, you know what I mean?
But, well, all of that stuff. I mean, we've seen in the past, we've seen just like +1/+0 and draw a card for a single white mana. And I was like, that would just be better because what I want to do is target my creatures and cantrip. But someone pointed out that with this version, you can't get blown out. You're getting your card back no matter what because target player investigates is on there.
You're also getting a token entering the battlefield, and you're also getting an artifact entering the battlefield.
Correct. Yeah. I think
this card does a lot for one mana.
Yes, I totally agree. I think this card is real good. And it like could end up being notable, but perfect sleeper card.
I also have, I don't know if this qualifies as a sleeper per our definitions, but Burrow Backup. 4 and a white sorcery, create 2/3/2 white hero tokens with vigilance, basic land cycling. Like, this card's pretty obviously powerful, but I think like sleeper in the terms of, like you said, has Imperial Oath vibes. Land cycling is great. The 2 tokens is great with stuff like Reed Richards. You get 2 tokens to wear your equipment well, if your equipment is any sort of good at all. Just think, where are you at on the land cyclers splashing themselves? Are you on like run a couple Burrow Backups and a Plains in my blue black deck or whatever?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think what all of them except the green one can splash themselves. I think the rest are all single pipped. So black gets the 4/5 mana 4/4 menace. Red gets a 5 mana 5/5 reach. Green gets a 6 mana 6/6 trampler, and blue gets a 4 mana 3/3 that connives. I think this one is certainly the most powerful to splash itself, but I'm pretty in on all of them.
Yeah.
Which I'm kind of surprised to say because I usually don't love the land cyclers. The fact that they are colorless, basic land cycling, meaning like they will just find whatever color you want and they can splash. And I don't think the 2 drops are particularly good.
I had to keep reminding myself in the drafts that they could get
any
land. Like, all of them help you splash however you want to splash.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I think that the land cyclers are all really good.
Yeah. I've got Ariel Doombot on this list. I'd like this one less, I think, now. But this is blue for a robot villain artifact creature 1/1 flyer. And it's got power up 5 and a blue. Put 3+1/+1 counters on this creature. So either a 6 mana 4/4 flyer or a single blue 1/1 flyer.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about that card.
Also have Bold Biochemist. This is 1 and a blue for a 1/3 with power up 6. Put a +1/+1 counter on this creature and draw 2 cards. Muldrifter is back, baby.
This card stinks. I can't believe this is on your list.
Stinks? This is a 2 drop that you can play that stays relevant later?
This is Landscape Painter. Like, we've seen this kind of card set over set. And it's not just, yes, Secrets of Strixhaven was an outlier in terms of how cards fit in there or whatever, but like derpy 2 drop up front, pay 6 mana later to draw 2 cards and make your derpy 2 drop not so derpy. This is just not a good card.
I could be convinced that you're right.
I don't think that card's yet. I don't think that card's yet. I want to talk to you about this card. This card I cannot wrap my brain around. Atlantis Attacks.
Five That's on my blue. List. I love and,
I know, this is such an interesting card. Five blue blue for a sorcery. It is teamwork four. So choose one, and if you pay the teamwork cost, you get both. Target player creates a 6/5 blue Leviathan creature token with hexproof and return one or two target non-land permanents to their owner's hands.
I love this card for several reasons. One, it's incredible. Like, if you cast it, I think this game, the game's going to be over. Like, 6/5 hexproof plus bounce two things, maybe for value on your end or tempoing your opponent out. It's that is, again, like, uncommon or rare power level, assuming you can cast it at 7 mana. Like, if it were a rare, it would probably cost 5 instead of 7 or whatever. But this is in the color that gets to connive. So, like, when it's not good, I think you're going to be able to pitch it and get your +1/+1 counter. So I like that aspect of it. There is some tension there, though, in that connive maybe incentivizes you to pitch extra lands and not get all the way up to 7 mana. But if I have to pick greater garbage on this card, I'm going to say sleeper great.
Yeah, I think the format is slow enough that you can get there on it. So it's also on my sleeper commons list. I'm very intrigued by it.
I've got a lot of blue commons on my sleeper commons list. I think blue is deep at common. Futurist Forge also looks pretty good to me. One in a blue, when it enters, draw cards, an artifact that cantrips up front, and then you can pay 3 in a blue, sack it to draw 2 cards. Mm-hmm. Getting to do that in installments is pretty nice. And I also think Frozen in Ice does not look horrible. That's the 2 in a blue aura. When it enters, tap enchant a creature. Enchanted creature loses all abilities and can't become untapped. Like, I think blue's going to need to get stuff dead, and I think this is about as close as blue gets to getting stuff dead.
And I think not sending stuff to the graveyard is going to be a benefit, because black really cares about two things in the yard. So web up, exile removal, and this are actually going to be beneficial to you.
Yes.
All right, what else is on my list? I think this card looks good. I feel like you gave this a 0 in our grading. This is Helicarrier Strike. Single white instant with teamwork 2. Deal 2 to target attacking or blocking creature, or deal 4 if the teamwork cost was paid. That's very
It's very efficient. It's
single mana to deal 4. 4 is the magic number.
Yeah, you're selling me on that. All right, I'm sold.
I think Helicarrier.
Like, just getting a better curve for white as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's not good. Like, the knock against it is if white only does aggressive,
it's a very bad aggressive card. Why I think I gave it a 0. Yeah.
Okay.
But if mana efficiency matters more, then all of a sudden I'm all about the card.
Is this card greater garbage? Red Room Recruit. 1 and a black, 1/2 human spy villain. When it enters, it connives.
It's too small ball. It's not good.
It's not Rafine's Informant?
No.
Why not? Just because it's a 1/2?
I mean, you'll play it. I don't think that's a sleeper common. Yeah, like, you're having to pitch something real to turn it into a 2/3. 2/3 is kind of whatever. You really want your stuff to die. It's harder for it to die.
This is a free way to get creatures in your yard for black.
Yeah. I mean, I see all that. I still don't love the card.
I'm going great on Red Room Recruit. I think this is a sleeper.
I've got Hydra Infiltration on my black sleepers. This is 3 and a black enchantment. When it enters, target opponent discards 2 cards, and whenever a creature you control attacks alone, target opponent loses 1 life, and you gain 1 life.
I mean, this is the definition of a sleeper, but I feel like I'm in a coma reading this card. This card ain't it. You are predisposed. Anytime a black enchantment says gain a life, lose a life, you're in.
But I think this is only a black-white card. But imagine getting a couple of these down. Imagine spending turn 4 and turn 5 doing nothing to affect the board. Maybe your opponent discard some cards. And then getting attacks in during those turns because your opponent's also not done anything.
What creatures?
The ones you played on turn 2 and turn 3.
Oh, those ones. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't really think
that card's going to be good, but I do like it.
Talk me off the ledge with this card. Speaking of discard, Ninja of the Hand. 2 and a black for a 2/2.
Oh, this is bad. bad.
Scar's bad.
Tuna Black. Tell other people what it does.
Tuna Black for a 2/2 human ninja villain with death touch and has power up 4 and a black. Each opponent discards a card. Put a +1/+1 counter on this creature.
You're never getting anything relevant with this. Your opponent sees it coming from a mile away.
What if you just think about it? This is a 5-drop. What if you don't like you play it on 3 in case of emergency? But
not
in, 5 mana.
Not impactful
you can't,
enough.
You can't see this from a mile away. It's a 2-for-1. There's no 2-for-1s in this format.
Nah, I don't buy it. It's too clunky.
I'm still buying stocks on Ninja of the Hand.
Still buying stonks, huh? Stonks are going up. Can I talk you into Hire a Crew? It says 2 and a red for an instant. Create a 2/1 black villain creature token with menace. Then creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn.
I don't think you can. What is this card?
Like, if you think about it as a instant speed, a flash creature, like probably combat trick-ish to push some damage from your stuff. But red wants the power on its creatures buffed. This is a 3-drop creature that does what red wants to do. It's going to buff your things to help the stuff where the power matters in red. It's got a 2/1 menace token, which is going to receive buffs well in the future. It makes a token enter the battlefield. It's a villain in black red. I think this checks a lot of boxes for red.
I'm not buying it. I feel like every box it checks is too small. Like if I'm buffing my creature's power, I want the creature's power buffed. If this gave it haste, creatures got +1/+0 in haste until end of turn.
No, it would be so pushed.
That wouldn't be that pushed.
3 mana, 3/1 menace haste that gave the rest of your team +1/+0. That would be insanely pushed.
That'd be fine. It'd be fine. It'd be a C. be fine. I think wow. Blazing Crescendo should be on our sleeper list. I think
that's a good take.
The more I'm looking at this, at what red does, I think Blazing Crescendo is really important. This is 1 and a red. Target creature gets +3/+1 until end of turn. Exile the top card of your library until the end of your next turn. You may play that card. But and this discussion is really what I feel like is the cool part of this format. I think it's important that we did what we did this episode, which is talking about here are the good cards. And you see that you and I are largely aligned with what the good cards are.
But what we're excited about is the next tier of like, how can we make these other cards work and rise up to the power level of what we see in the format?
And the first 2 weeks are going to be chock full of everybody going, did you see this? Did you see that you can do this? Did you see these cards working together? And that is what's going to make this format sweet, I think.
I cannot imagine being a person who doesn't know about the Fantastic Four combo.
Yes.
And then like seeing that happen to you the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I've also got Repulsor Blast on my list, which again, not really the game of sleeper commons, but I do think this card's going to be better than normal. It's 3 and a red sorcery teamwork 2, deals 5 damage to target creature. If the spell was cast using teamwork, it also deals 2 damage to that creature's controller. I just think you're going to need to be able to kill bigger stuff in red. I think this is closer to 4 mana, kill whatever you want, than it is not.
And with Hawkeye in play, you can deal 4 damage to your opponent with the bonus.
Heck yeah, you can.
God, Hawkeye looks so good. The only other card, we should just talk about this. Rapid Rescue is very good. This is the single green instant. Mill 2 cards, put a permanent from among the milled cards into your hand, you gain 2 life.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember Seed of Hope? This is a functional reprint of Seed of Hope from March of the Machine. And that card was very good in that format.
You have to have a very high permanent count in your deck.
What in what world do you not have a... You think you might miss on this?
Yeah.
You're half your deck is permanent lands. What are you talking about? It's very hard to miss on Rapid Rescue. It's very hard to miss. And it's a... like this is
what? Okay, time out. Can we... What number of creatures do you need to have before
you do know that lands are permanents, right?
I understand that.
Do you understand that?
I do understand that. So you've got 17 lands and what, 15 creatures, and we think that's good enough?
100% that's good enough.
But then you're also running this, but you have to run removal too, and then like your creature count starts to dip down into 13. Are we happy with that? Because you're trying to get creatures in the graveyard. There's some very real tension between needing
artifacts
to run
and enchantments also fit this bill. Like instants and sort. Look, you're telling me that you know what a permanent is, but I'm not convinced that you do based on your skepticism of this card.
Okay, but you're telling me there's some real cognitive dissonance here in that like, if we're excited about this card, presumably you're wanting to run 2 to 3 copies of it. And then you also need to run interaction. And that's pushing your, like, this card being in your deck is pushing your permanent count lower.
This is a good card. Like, I don't know how to talk about this other than either telling you just it's a good card or
to listing what types of magic cards are permanents.
Or I could do something else that you're, this other thing you're not going to like me doing is pulling up 17 lands for March of the Machine and telling you.
I'm going to hate that.
You're going to hate that.
Let's wrap up this conversation here.
The thing that I really like about this, I think it's just going to be good for green, but in green black specifically, the fact that this lets you, okay, I can do this on one and maybe bin a creature, grab a land, do either mana cycle on two or connive on two, and then turn three Hydra Troopers is just on already.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That is great. A couple other green cards. Undercover Scrawl. Like, looks better than normal to me. Like, usually I don't like a green mana dork, but this is one and a green for a 1/1. Taps to add a mana of any color. As long as there are two or more creature cards in your graveyard, it gets +2/+2 and is all creature types. Mm-hmm. Also, really like Ant-Man's Armies. 2 and a green, 3/2. When it enters, create a food token or a treasure token. I think that card is pretty pushed. Like, probably better than the hero, the bird, cat, dog hero. The Pet Avengers.
Pet Avengers.
Like, just the fact that it's 3 mana instead of 4 mana, I kind of like more.
Well, and like, whatever, if you've got your little life gain pockets of synergy, making a food is nice. Treasure.
It's got artifacts are entering the battlefield. It's it's rectangles. I like Ant-Man's Army quite a bit. And then the last one, I think this is my hottest sleeper, or the sleeper I think I'm most likely to be right on, which is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This is 2 and a white for a 2/4. Hero, whenever a creature you control attacks alone, that creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. I think this is going to let you push damage, and I think is going to be actively good in multiples on the battlefield. Like, this is basically 2/4 exalted, and I think the format wants you to be attacking with large things.
The tension for like cards like this, and what was it, Agent 13, the white uncommon?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just worried about the 2-drops that you can curve these into.
Yeah, the 2-drops get outclassed pretty quickly in the format, I think.
Yeah, we haven't talked a lot. Like, the cards that we've listed have not been 2-drops.
They have not largely been 2-drops, no.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see that. I think I've got eyes out for the 2-mana 2/2 in white that has prowess. I think that looks good to me. But yeah, but maybe it just doesn't matter. Maybe you just play whatever 2s you have, and then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. makes those 2s better.
Yeah, I do like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a card.
I'm really excited about this format.
I am super excited for this format. It just looks like there's so much room to explore and do fun, creative things, and that you're going to have the time to do those fun, creative things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. That's it for me. Left it all on the field.
I agree. Same here. I have nothing else written down.
Okay. On that note, thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our Patreon, our merch, all of that available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
When it comes to your roof, don't wait until it's too late. Get a new metal roof today from Erie Home. They're built to withstand up to 120 mile per hour winds and are backed by a 50-year warranty. They're one of the nation's leading residential roofing providers. Schedule your free inspection at eriehome.com/podcast to receive up to 50% off installation, up to $1,200. That's eriehome.com/podcast. Minimum purchase required. Restrictions apply. See rep for warranty or promotional details.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.